This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the morning run begins with myself, Sharad Kutan, and Julian Ng.
Good morning.
Good morning. And it's always exciting. It's a Friday, which means for many of us...
Oh, thanks for the reminder.
It's the last day of the week. I mean, are you excited by the prospect of a Friday? Are you the kind of person that really...
I love it.
You love it because of the weekend?
Yeah. I mean, I look forward to 2 days of either doing nothing or just... You know, the less exciting one doing is catching up on some work.
Or errands. They're always errands. I was sent a little message to Julian yesterday, and it was a little one of those WhatsApp stickers, and it said something like, you know, Thursday is a reminder of how long the week has been. And I thought, well, what a negative and depressing thought. I'm always excited by Thursdays because, you know, Thursdays are then followed by Fridays.
But Thursday? Why Thursday? Why is Thursday a reminder and not Friday?
Well, because in the mind of this depressive individual who created the sticker, you know, Thursday was just too long, you know, in the week. But we didn't actually have a long week this week. We had a short week. We, in fact, had only a 4-day.
It just felt very long.
Did it feel long to you?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, okay, well.
Felt like a long week, so I'm glad it's the weekend has come.
Yeah, but not quite. We still have 4 hours of the morning run before we conclude at least the morning runs part of the day. And then there's, of course, much more because BFM just continues on right into the night.
Yeah, exactly.
So, okay, what we have in store for you this morning includes a grill with Martin Hayden. He is the Chief Commercial Officer of Seek Asia. Julian, you're going to be speaking to Martin. Is that how you pronounce his name? Is that Hayden, is it?
I think so. Hayden. Yep. They acquired, Seek Asia acquired JobStreet for 1.7 billion. And
1.7 billion ringgit?
Ringgit, yep. The process made Mark Chang, the original founder, a very, very rich man, a billionaire, in fact. And of course, we have spoken to Mark Chang many times before. And in fact, Mark Chang is one of the shareholders of BFM or JobStreet, you know. And the original JobStreet, that is. And JobStreet is today 100% owned by Seek Asia, which is an Australian company with a global presence in online jobs platform. So quite important, I think, from the perspective of how the global economics work as far as employment is concerned. But not only that, we're also talking about the competitive landscape of the online jobs platforms and the importance of the Malaysian and Singapore jobs market, because they also took over JobsDB, the other giant online jobs platform in Singapore. And so in the context of how these two economies work and what the future means for job seekers and employers as well, these are some of the things that we're going to discuss with Martin.
Right. I mean, was this acquisition very recent?
About 2 years ago.
Oh, 2 years ago.
Relatively.
Okay. And I guess one of the things always with these acquisitions is the price. You know, we talked about it with... When discussing the controversy over Felder's planned acquisition of Eagle High, right? I mean, so it's, again, how do you come to that valuation? Is it too much to pay? What are the prospects going forward with something like this? 1.7 billion a ringgit, because it might not be much in US dollars anymore, but still it's substantial, isn't it?
I think it's absolutely substantial. And I think as far as tech companies go, these companies like JobStreet and Seek Asia are not valued according to the same way as the other tech unicorns and the other tech deals that we see in Silicon Valley, but they are valued according to profitability because these companies are profitable. In fact, if you look at Seek's number where they are listed in Australia, their numbers are what you would feel as quite normal, healthy companies, right? Because they are making money. Right. And it's very unlike, say, Uber, which is making billions and billions of losses a year. So this is a tech company with a difference and with some degree of focus on profitability, which is very interesting to me because it's not growth at all costs. There is also some focus in profitability. And I find that extremely interesting. And I'm going to put that question to him, whether there is this detachment from tech-type growth, you know, tech-style growth.
Well, very interesting questions because I grew up believing that, you know, the bottom line for capitalism was, in fact, the profit motive. Yeah, and profitability.
No longer, right? Well, you can set up a company tomorrow and try to gain as much people's buying into your ecosystem as possible without making one ringgit of profits and sell that ownership of the people in your ecosystem to somebody else who's willing to pay for that without a single drop of profits.
Interesting. Even the, you know, the whole phenomenon around what specs, you know, kind of
specs.
Specs. Yeah. I mean, the idea of listing a company on the basis of an idea, right?
Absolutely.
And
yes.
Sort of collecting
and
public
I spoke to the chief of the Securities Commission in Malaysia on that, Tan Sri Ranjit Singh. Is it Dato? I think he's still... He just got his Datoship. Yeah. And he said SPAC was a way to bring the notion of private equity to normal investors because private equity usually are only available to people with a lot of money and it's being shown to you if you have a net worth of R1 billion, for example. And, you know, these deals are being shown to you if you want to plonk 1 million here and a few million there. So normally it wasn't the kind of deal that was available to normal people. So SPAC had the bad press of being involved in the oil and gas industry, which we all know went through a very hard time in the last 2 years. But the idea is to bring private equity investments to normal people like you and me. And today we are seeing the emergence, very slow in fact, emergence of different types of businesses apart from the oil and gas business in SPACs. For example, we have a F&B SPAC called Red Senna. And I am following Red Senna with very keen interest. I hope they do well, actually, because I want non-oil and gas SPAC to do well and to invite other industries to come in.
Right, because we had one success with Hibiscus, so they got their qualifying asset, and therefore they're no longer SPAC. They graduated. They're just
exactly, and it's still oil and gas, which to me is boring. You know,
ooh, oil and gas runs the world, lubricates the engines of capitalism, Julian. And I don't need to tell you about that. Okay, so on current affairs today, we're going to be looking at the question of the Russian hack, the claims made by President Barack Obama that the Russian intelligence system and the Russian presidency sought to undermine an integral part of the democratic system of the U.S., its electoral system, and also, you know, the consequences of this very late retaliation by the Obama administration to the alleged hacking the system. And so that is the subject of the discussion. We're going to be speaking to Prashant Parameswaran, who's the associate editor with the Diplomat based in Washington, D.C.
So this is an infiltration of the electoral system of one of the most powerful countries of the world. And I'm sure many of these, boffins and pundits in America right now sitting on the edge of their seats saying, how can the Russians be allowed to come in, right? This is the problem.
Well, actually, there are all kinds of things. Julian Assange has come to say that, in fact, the kind of systems that were allegedly hacked were so weakly guarded, it didn't really need, special Russian attack on it. Also, you know, there are people criticizing Obama. So what if it was so detrimental to the integrity of the U.S. system, why didn't he act earlier?
Exactly. I mean, he didn't complain a pip during the campaign trail.
Yeah, so then the question is, I mean, I think he did, but he was very restrained, and the argument apparently was that he didn't want to seem to be on Hillary's side. He didn't want to take sides. So, you know, last night on Bloomberg, political analyst called Ian Bremmer was very critical. He says, you know, he was very supportive of the Obama administration, but he says this is just one of many instances of Obama's failure to act, in a way that for him makes sense. Because if something is as you know, as detrimental to the integrity of the American system, then it should it require a response then and there, because the impression of bipartisanship surely isn't trumped by the national security issue, right?
Pun intended.
Pun intended. So Obama comes in for quite a bit of criticism over this. Also, I think, you know, if you look at the last 8 years in terms of U.S.-Russian relations, of course, you know, have deteriorated to a considerable extent. But some pundits are saying, you know, that in fact Russia got the better of the U.S. in many of these conflicts. Ukraine, for instance, America, you know, supporting a regime change there only to have the Russians come in, annex the Crimea, and, you know, and now set up a kind of buffer state within the Ukraine, and it's a royal mess there. And why was it that? What business did the U.S. have in trying to meddle in the politics of border states with Russia? So all kinds of, I think, criticisms of Obama.
I think if you throw China into the mix, the geopolitical scene around this region is going to get a little bit more interesting with Trump coming in, because he has different ideas of how to do things. And in fact, that United Nations vote still under technically the Obama administration to frown upon the UN resolution to frown upon Israel's settlement expansion in some of the occupied territories.
Yeah,
that is going to be very interesting for Trump as to how America can maintain its influence and its position in so many parts of the world, in the Middle East, in Asia here with a pivot to Asia policy, and now with China, with all their expansionary ambitions. I think that's going to be really interesting to watch.
Yeah, I mean, China is something really to watch. We have the news that Apple has withdrawn the New York Times from its China Apple store following a request from the Chinese authorities. And again, you know, demonstrating that there are no champions of freedom of expression or of an open and free press. Julian, I just picked up this book a couple of weeks ago. It's called The Rise and Fall of the House of Bo. And this has to do with, you know, one of those big scandals in the Communist Party of China. I don't know if you remember the story.
Bo Xilang, right?
That's right. And, yeah, you know, it's a beautifully written book. I mean, it's quite critical of the of China and the Communist Party. It's written by a guy called John Gannot. He's a China correspondent for the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age. Also writes for Foreign Policy. And he tells a little, in a slim little volume, tells this wonderful story of the families of, you know, of Mr. Bo, and of course rivals like Xi Jinping, all of them princelings, as it were, you know, children of well-known communist cadres.
Yeah, it looks like a book that was published in the 70s or something. Very nice design. Nice little book that I would like to hold in my hands.
Yeah, it has the style is that it's written in 2012. So yeah, it is. It's not a new book, but it's a very beautifully written book. I mean, you know, something that...
Okay, I'm going to get that.
Also in the news, very quickly, Trump has tweeted out that Toyota will face hefty tariffs on cars built in Mexico for the U.S. market. Toyota's president, Akio Toyoda, says the company has no immediate plans to curb production in Mexico. So Trump already showing his hand in many ways around that issue of, you know, how individual businesses should operate. Is that something that concerns you? That you look at a president intervening in enterprise levels decisions about what is best for them in terms of production, you know, and kind of using a kind of nationalist or rhetoric of patriotism and the bully pulpit that he now has.
Absolutely.
To kind of get his way.
I'm quite concerned about this, because I think it smacks of a certain degree of American imperialism, because you're just ignoring the kind of agreements and the covenants that have been made with NAFTA and all the other global agreements. I mean, I don't totally agree wholesale with the idea of globalization and with TPP and so on. But, you know, if there are contracts being written and signed on the dotted line and you unilaterally and arbitrarily make such decisions through your tweet and criticizing countries like Mexico and companies like Toyota, for instance, it seems just very arbitrary to me. So I'm concerned about that kind of ruling through tweet through tweets, you know.
Yeah, and again, we had the Ford case as well.
Yeah, yesterday all we talked about it. Yeah.
All these instances of the new dispensation coming into power in Washington and how it's going to manage economic affairs. We'll be back with more after this. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, The Morning Run continues, and that was Blind Faith with their song, Well, All Right. The Blind Faith, of course, is a musical collaboration that includes Eric Clapton, Steve Winwood, and some other greats in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
I'm so impressed by your music knowledge, Sharad.
Which was just supplied by me.
Very impressive.
I was supplied to me by Timothy Kang, who sits in with us in the studio, who is in fact himself a musician and singer songwriter. You know, that kind of hipster thing. All these young people.
Cool.
Everybody wants to be a singer songwriter.
Everybody wants to be.
And they wear plaid shirts and jeans. I mean, it's like regulation wear for these singer songwriters. And because he's like full of this kind of musical knowledge, and so if you remember. Eric Clapton. Hold on. He's still with us, isn't he? Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Okay, he is. But somebody who has, in fact, passed away is the creator of that famous cartoon strip, Lao Fu Zi. And his name is Alfonso Wong. He died, actually on the 1st of January. In the United States, he was 93.
We
just got news of it.
American citizen, I guess. I think the reason why this is so important is because I grew up with this, looking at a lot of the cartoons, and I don't read Chinese. Some of the strips were, in fact, written with Chinese dialogue boxes, but a lot of his cartoons did not require any dialogue at all, and was quite universal. And I really enjoyed it. It reminds me of also what Rowan Atkinson does with Mr. Bean, right?
Lot of slapstick, was it?
Well, not necessarily slapstick, but a lot of it communication through actions and through pictures, not necessarily through dialogue, which made the products very universal and accepted the whole around the world.
I think also, I'm sure there was an animated version of the comic strip.
Yes,
and I believe
there was,
in fact, maybe a movie or two, with those characters. One of them is kind of a Laurel and Hardy almost like characters, because one is tall and thin, one's short and fat. I wonder if ever we'll have a opposite combination, a tall and fat and short and thin person. But who knows? Maybe that's
tall
not,
and
as,
fat.
Not as funny. Anyway, what I've done is I have tweeted out the link to it. So if you want to read up a little bit about the life of a man who brought smiles to the lives of people like Julian Ng, myself, and we were much, much younger. It's interesting the news has come to us so late. Maybe news is traveling slow from the U.S. Not all news, though. Julian, if yesterday you were watching Bloomberg TV, they had an interview between Charlie...
Which everyone does.
Maybe. Charlie Rose and Ian Bremmer. I mentioned him earlier because he talked about... I'm not quite sure. I caught the interview kind of in the middle of the... of it, and I wasn't quite sure when this was taped, but what was really fascinating about it was at one point Ian Bremmer, who's a American political scientist specializing in U.S. foreign policy, he says that while he wants Trump to succeed, he didn't anticipate or predict Trump's victory, and he said he's always been supportive of Obama. He's always wanted Obama to succeed, but he's quite critical of Obama's record. He says he similarly wants Trump to succeed because his success would, of course, be good for the country. He says he doesn't know if Trump will fail because of one, ineptitude, two, corruption, or three, authoritarian tendencies. And he says that of the three possible reasons for a failure in the Trump administration, the first two don't concern him so much. He says you know, ineptitude can be corrected by all these great institutions that America has and the people in it. Corruption, he says, all similarly could be dealt with. But he says it's Trump's authoritarian tendencies that worry him most, because he says that could lay the or undermine you know, American institutions for generations to come. So fascinating, I think, insight into some of the deep worries of even mainstream political analysts like Ian Bremmer.
Mm-hmm. And I think that Ian Bremmer joins a long list of very smart thinkers who support the idea of a Trump presidency and want Trump to succeed, because I think they are, I guess, in my own words and my own thinking, they're sick of the system, right? The original system, and they want someone who's maverick enough to change it. I think Bernie Sanders offered a way, and so did Trump on the other side of the spectrum. But contrast this to the feelings of, say, Noam Chomsky, again, another very powerful thinker, someone who's very well followed and respected as well, and calling Trump one of the most dangerous presidents ever to take over America. And this corresponds with point number three of Bremmer, who said that Trump's authoritarian tendencies are bound to blur the lines between what's right and what's wrong. And that's what I found that Mexican statement, that Mexican tweet, so dangerous about what Trump is doing. I mean, we have no idea. We have no idea what Trump is thinking. He's so unpredictable, and that's very dangerous for the world.
Well, you know, Chomsky, of course, is one of my favorite sort of, you know, left American intellectuals. He's 88, you know, and still going strong. Just coming back to the question of Trump, and there's the latest kind of problem on the horizon for the incoming Trump administration is that he's toying with the idea of giving his daughter and son-in-law a role in his new administration. And this is going to be quite challenging, because in 1967, the U.S. passed an anti-nepotism law. And this anti-nepotism law was precipitated by the decisions by President John F. Kennedy to appoint his brother Robert Kennedy as Attorney General, and the successor president Lyndon Johnson was very concerned about these issues and also about the integrity of the office of the presidency, and so wanted to protect it by instituting this anti-nepotism law. Now, you know, because we have in politics all over, and in Malaysia is no exception to that rule of siblings sometimes, or family members being, you know, in politics, sometimes in the same government. And, you know, and is that something that you worry about? I mean, quite apart from the specificities of the American case,
absolutely.
We can talk about that too, but is that something that worries
you? I mean, absolutely. I mean, again, this really goes back to how Trump does things. There is no principle-based explanation of why the hiring can take place. You know, it's a case of just because I feel that I can do it, I just do it. And there is this maxim in the legal fraternity, which is that justice must not only be done, it must also be seen to be done, which was why when Lim Guan Eng made that bungalow purchase in Penang, you know, if you're in the position of power, you must go through all means to show that you had already fulfilled standards of integrity, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't mean whether if your purchase was right or wrong, if it wasn't wrong, therefore it's okay. I don't think it's about that. It's how the world sees you. And
yeah,
that's very important.
So there's a kind of perception game on one half. But
yeah,
there are issues like, okay, so you look at even the DAP, right? We, of course, have, you know, Lim Guan Eng's father, Lim Kit Siang, of course, you know, stalwart of the party. And there you have that relationship, right? Father and son, both kind of like really strong people in that party. We have family members in cabinet today, you know, the prime minister and his cousin, Hishamuddin Hussein. And, of course, Najib himself is the son of the second prime minister of Malaysia. So are people worried about those kinds of relationships? You know,
they have done time. Those guys have done time, right? Decades and decades of time in politics. I mean,
Sound like they've done time in jail.
Which Lim Guan Eng literally did, right?
Yeah. He did, yes.
Yeah. So
So you mean they pay their dues?
That's proven, yeah. There must be some kind of handling of public perception for a role such as important as the office of the President of the United States.
Well, it's Singapore, Lee Kuan Yew and Lee Hsien Loong. And, you know, and there was, and the fact that Lee Hsien Loong's wife leads a huge government fund, right? Temasek. And so, you know, this idea that what in Singapore always, you know, if anybody ever hinted at nepotism, they would be dragged to court and sued.
Exactly.
You know, but
exactly my point.
Well, fascinating discussions. We're going to be coming back after the news. And the person poised at the mic is Lynn Mark, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, The Morning Run continues. And that was Pour Some Sugar On Me by Def Leppard. I mean, I wouldn't do that in my apartment because ants would just be crawling.
Ants,
all over.
Too much ants.
I don't think you can do this in the tropics, you know, pouring sugar over people. Honestly.
You can try.
You can try
because we have a lot of sweet stuff around, you know, your teh tarik.
And Julian, you yourself are sweet. Okay, so that was Julian
you.
And I'm sure I'd cut in. And the Morning Run continues. We were talking about nepotism and the Trump administration because there's talk that he might give his daughter and her husband, his son-in-law, a position in the administration that was going to come up against a law from 1967 that bars nepotism. It certainly bars nepotism in cabinet positions, but not necessarily in White House staffing. Now, what we know from the report is, Julian, is that if, in fact, Ivanka and her husband, Mr. Kushner, get involved in the administration more seriously, they might have to relinquish their stake in the Trump enterprises, you know. And so that might be a very costly move for them. But what if they don't even have that official position? Because that would be, you know, and they might be open to charges of conflict of interest and such. What if they just help him out? Maybe they're his kitchen cabinet. They're the ones who really
Isn't
rule
that
the
glaringly
roost.
More illegal?
Well, the question is, how would you even prove it? You know, because you would have to prove influence, and what kind of influence would that be if they sit around the dinner table and talk?
If there is that vision for the second term, I'm sure a lot of people would be collecting data right now, as they had collected that video of the locker room scandal. Right. So I think in this day and age, it's so easy to collect information.
Well, then you mean somebody at the family dinner table videotaping stuff? You'd have to find
staff,
one of these
staff members, right? Oh. You know, videoing the ins and outs of all Trump's relatives. And in fact, Bernie Sanders had just challenged Donald Trump with a republication of one of Trump's tweets when Trump yesterday, I guess when they were debating whether to abolish Medicare and Medicaid, Bernie Sanders produced literally a placard of Donald Trump's, a gigantic placard of Donald Trump's tweet, who Trump himself saying that he would not take this away. You know, you need to go down to that level just to deal with Trump.
Right. So it says, I was the first and only potential GOP candidate to state that there will be no cuts to Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Huckabee copied me. So it obviously was in part of a debate between the rivals during the Republican primaries. And so Bernie's saying, well, he said this. Can we hold him to his word? And I wonder how many politicians, make promises of all sorts on the stump while they're, you know, canvassing for votes. And then once they achieve power, do just whatever they want, regardless of those promises. And, you know, and just hope that the public doesn't remember 4 years hence or when you next go to the polls.
Yeah, which is not something that's easy to forget, because in this day and age, you leave behind a trail of information everywhere. So it's quite easy to pick up from whenever.
Okay, what other trends are there in the world that are worth pointing out? I mean, we are now, of course, kind of officially fixated with Donald Trump, the president-elect of the United States of America, soon to be inaugurated. I believe the 20th of January is the date of his inauguration. I don't know if he's gotten those A-list celebrities to perform free at his inauguration. There's no news of that.
I thought they didn't want to.
Well, apparently, yes. And that's been the news and the talk and much of the mockery, against, directed at the incoming president has been on the fact that he can't seem to get any of these A-listers.
The problem is with Trump as well, that he can't help but want them to come on. Right, his vein that way.
Yeah, he is, and maybe it's also a function of people, who float around in that upper crust of humanity, who often are driven by their own sense of self worth, and paradoxically need a lot of other people to affirm their sense of wealth, self worth, So he's not going to be satisfied by a local school band playing for him. He's going to want the adulation of America's most talented and most successful entertainers.
Yeah, and this relates to one of the articles that I came across entitled 10 Ways You're Making Your Life Harder Than It Has to Be. And it really, point number one really reminds me of Trump, which is that you ascribe intent. For example, another driver cut you off, your friend never texted you back, your co-worker went to lunch without you, or some A-list stars decided not to come to your party, therefore you become very petulant and sulky.
Well, the problem really for Trump is that the convention is you can't pay for these entertainers. And so he's kind of stuck. I mean, when you're rich and you can pay for anything, including love and friendship, he's not allowed to pay.
Which makes it more meaningful because you have to earn your respect.
Well, but also it makes it difficult for you because if the A-listers don't come, what kind of signal does it send?
Exactly,
out?
which is why I think is kind of a psychological factor here that you need to destroy that perceived intent of your friends and the people around you.
Well, so there are many, kind of on the liberal or libertarian end of the American political spectrum that didn't like Trump going into the elections and are therefore kind of, signaling their continued disregard or contempt of his politics. Alan Bourdain, Anthony Bourdain, has already kind of come out very strongly in those terms. In that Charlie Rose, Ian Bremmer interview, Julian, Ian Bremmer also talked about Silicon Valley because he said apart from Peter Thiel, nobody, in Silicon Valley, which is he described as the hotbed of libertarian American sentiment, supported Trump. Question is, even though that Trump had that meeting with Silicon Valley heads, which he says, well, if any American president were to call the heads of any industry, they would all turn up. Whether they truly are on his side is a different matter. But
it's all business, right?
Yeah, he actually is worried for Silicon Valley. He thinks that, we already see Trump, meddling in things like, the car, the auto industry and such. Whether is he going to start meddling in the kind of innovations and initiatives coming out of Silicon Valley. Because clearly, a lot of the initiatives are also taking away jobs. They're turning to robotics or artificial intelligence. And so investments in even those companies don't necessarily translate into jobs. And if jobs is what Trump wants to hold out as his success story, then how will he deal with those innovations?
Well, also, I think if you wanted to go down the path of tyranny, which Trump so obviously wants to, the first thing you got to control is the tech, because so much of our lives right now dependent and tracked by technology. You want to control people's lives, you want to shape it, and technology has the ability to do that, which is why I agree with Bremmer that this is quite dangerous.
Yeah, but Bremmer, okay, so to be fair to Bremmer, he doesn't, he's not prejudging it. He's just saying this, we have all the warning signs. Maybe he's a little more cautious than somebody like Chomsky, who's already declared Trump dangerous. I think somebody like Bremmer is saying, well, we don't really know, but but we need to watch carefully because he has shown signs of it. And the question is, within the American political system, unlike, say, the Chinese political system, how far can somebody with authoritarian tendencies go? There are institutional constraints on him. I mean, he's president, but he's not dictator for, you know, 4 years. He has to deal with Congress. He still has to deal with the Supreme Court and such.
Yep.
So, you know, all these issues, I think, that will continue to come up, in our discussions of the incoming Trump administration. I'm going to tweet out this 10 ways to make ways you're making your life harder than it has to be, which is a really nice way of putting it. So, because often we have like 10 ways to make your life easier. This is noting those habits of mind that we have that actually are detrimental to our happiness or the ease in which we could conduct our lives. What else do we have in that list, Julian? I'm going to tweet it out.
Number two is you're the star of your own movie. It is little wonder that you believe the world revolves around you. That's not very good path to go down to. You fast forward to apocalypse, self-explanatory. I think that points there.
And, you mean people who have like a really pessimistic view of the of life or the future of the planet? Is it?
Not only pessimistic, but I guess a terminal view of things in life. Because you can either see the glass as half empty or half full many times, most of the time. Other points, you have unrealistic and or communicated expectations. Pretty interesting article, I think. Something that is food for thought for the new year, I guess, if we are into all those kind of things like resolutions and so on.
Very quickly, are you a glass half full or half empty kind of guy, Julian?
I must admit that I'm a very critical person and I see things half empty. I want the world to be a better place, and as a result of that, I see the world as half empty, I think.
Okay, I'm similar to you. I want to see a better world, but I think I'm a glass half full. I like to think so, maybe. Okay. I don't know. Coming back, we'll be back with the news at the top of the hour, but now some music for you. Billy Idol and Cradle of Love on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.